Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, how tomato juice, if it's not salted, can help lower your heart disease risk. From Tokyo Medical University, published in Food Science Nutrition. We have a lot more behind that. Plus, we're going to have some commentaries today. Over the last 2 days, I've done commentaries on the downside of all of the technologies, artificial intelligence, transhumanism, why we should be very concerned, and we're not. Also today, I'm going to take a look at the 1,000-pound problem sitting at the table with us, and no one's paying attention to it. Debt. And how we've been given wrong information about debt and what role it plays in our life. So I'll give you the problem and the solutions on debt today. Time permitting, we'll also go to a few of the audio clips, including the campaign to silence one of America's leading investigative journalists, Max Blumenthal. Plus, they're attacking Professor Camille Paglia for her controversial feminism views. Well, let's hear what they have to say. Let's hear what she has to say. And I think you'll find it of an interest. On Monday, I asked the audience, what should we do about people who need to know about the environment, global warming, the fact we've run out of time, and that we're not making progress? And what would you suggest? I held off on my own opinions, and I asked you to call in our voice line and give your opinions. And you did. If you would still like to, our number to call in, 862-800-6805. Again, this is a voicemail line where you can call in, and I don't accept anonymous calls. So at least give your first name. And give us your opinion. 862-800-6805. Now, let me again explain for those of you who didn't hear what I was discussing. What we try to do on this program is provide tools for social and personal change. I try to do commentaries almost every day on why we should be concerned about staying intentionally ignorant. Because when we stay intentionally ignorant, simply we don't want to know something, it may seem like it's overwhelming. The problems are too big, we're too small, we don't have the resources. So what does it matter what I do, what I think? But I happen to believe it does matter what you believe and think. In fact, just today, a person that I've known for a long time sent me an email. His name is Mitchell Rabin. Mitchell works with people trying to help them, and he had been receiving some of the testimonials from a previous retreat just about a month ago, and they're almost unbelievable. They're so powerful. In fact, my brother Steve actually suggested that I not air them or not even post them because people couldn't believe that this many changes could happen in such a short period of time. However, as I said to my brother, isn't it time that we, who have a different approach to many of the issues of life, stop feeling defensive and apologizing for doing what the mainstream orthodox medical community has never done? If we are having success with multiple sclerosis and AIDS and Alzheimer's, shouldn't we share that information, and those who are interested will pay attention, those who are not won't? And it's been consistent through my entire career that I've been able to share insights through books and articles and lectures and forums and health support groups and retreats and clinical studies of there's a different way of approaching. I certainly believe in freedom of choice, and if you want chemotherapy, you should be able to take that. But what if you knew that there was another way of approaching cancer. And there was hard scientific evidence that it worked far better than the orthodox approach. Shouldn't you have the right to that information? And yet even today, 99% of the people who vaccinate believe in vaccines, even if they've read stories to the contrary on the internet. It's as if until it happens to me, I'm not going to believe it could happen to anyone. And hence, then extend that. If I don't believe that the government's doing anything wrong and I've done nothing that I should be ashamed of or hide, then I don't care if they listen to my phone calls, read my emails, take my iris scans, take my DNA. I would be very concerned with that kind of mindset because you're staying intentionally ignorant. You're not looking at the truth, what happens to organizations and individuals, bureaucracy, technocrats, bureaucrats, oligarchs, duopolies, that actively seek out power over a person until one day it's not your body or choice, it's the government's. You must vaccinate. And there's absolutely zero proof of the safety and efficacy of their vaccines. And the more research you do, the more certain you become of that position. So my question then was, what approach should we take when 97% of Americans choose not to change? They choose not to become informed. They do not want to broaden their perspective. They do not want to know from the other. How do we reach them? What message do you share with them? Appreciating that you have no right to force or cajole your opinion upon anyone. But at the same time, many of us, including myself, have seen our own family members, brothers, fathers, mothers, aunts and uncles die because they chose not to change and didn't choose to believe that we were more of an authority figure than the doctor who was telling them it's okay to smoke and okay to drink, just moderation. In my family's own mindset, that was 4 packs of cigarettes a day was moderate. So it doesn't matter how many times you're right, and it's really irrelevant if you have all the truth on your side, because at the end it's not about truth or right, it's about power and our conditioned response to it. So how do you get through that? How do you reach people? Because right now, we're in for some big pain. And when I say big pain, I see it coming. It is massive. Massive global climate changing events. Just look right now in Nebraska. Look around the world. India today has 200 million people suffering at 122 degree temperature. Those are killing temperatures, where if you're outside for more than 15, 20 minutes, you could die. You don't even see that in the American media. We don't see all the farmers who can't plant or did too early, and their seeds are either washed out or going to get in too late to have a fall harvest. So what does that mean for 1 million farmers in Nebraska, Indiana, Illinois, Colorado, Kansas? We're disconnected from it as long as we go to a store and can buy what we want. What does it mean when we say we're going to boycott Atlanta filmmaking because, well, we should because of their positions on abortion? At the same time, Disney has been filming around the world in countries that do not allow abortions and don't allow you to be gay, like the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, all these countries they're filming in. So is it that they're against something when they can make a political benefit from it, and hence a financial benefit, by virtue of posturing in Atlanta, but continue to do business all over the world? Which is it? So you see, we're at a very confused place because most people, quite frankly, are just misinformed, and not because they're stupid. People are not stupid, but because they're intentionally ignorant, and with intentional ignorance comes an intentional neglect. And when you can neglect something because you're not aware of its consequences, then you're going to get hurt. So your thoughts. I've given you the number you can call in on and share your points of view. That number is 862-800-6805. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. And we're going to start Oh, by the way, what I was saying, my email I got from Mitchell Rabin, he sent three statements, and I read them, and they were all worth sharing with you. One's from Margaret Mead, the great anthropologist. She said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." Then Buckminster Fuller, who I interviewed many times, said, "You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." And then Nelson Mandela said, it always seems impossible until it's done. So maybe when we reverse all these conditions that seem impossible, even to the medical doctors who are there, maybe one or two of those people will change. The paradigm will not change. It can't. There's too much money, careers, and status and power in supporting that. But for the individual, yeah, they can change. And hopefully they will, and hopefully we'll all be a part of that. Now, in a study published in Food Science Nutrition, drinking unsalted tomato juice, because regular store-bought tomato juice has a lot of sodium in it, but it was able to lower blood pressure and lower the bad LDL cholesterol in people who are at risk of cardiovascular disease, which is most people. So drink a glass of fresh, organic, unsalted tomato juice every day. From the University of Basel in Switzerland, psychological placebos found to be as effective as medicinal placebos. What's that mean? Swiss researchers suggested that placebos were all in the mind. They recently conducted a trio of experiments that indicated a placebo didn't need to come in physical form, as long as a healthcare professional could convince a patient about the supposed effectiveness of the psychological placebo. Now, a placebo is any substance or treatment that does not achieve any therapeutic effects by design. On some occasions, a medical placebo produces some impact on the health of the patient, and it may also end up working if its psychological effects are attributed to it. As such, placebos and psychotherapy can be classed together as psychology-based treatments. Both methods rely upon similar psychological approaches and can pull off more or less the same effects on patients. For example, if you're sitting with a patient and the patient is depressed, and they're depressed because they're fearful of everything, so you try to understand the basis, the progenitor, where did this originate, this fear of everything? Going outside, going to parties, meeting new people, trying new things, even trying new cuisines, living a very constricted, ritualized, predictable life. And you start to realize, wow, that's an awful lot of people. And then you start to hear the person talk about earlier in life, because it's almost always earlier in life something happened. What happened? Well, in many cases, it's when someone did something, it wasn't done the way someone else expected or to the level of success that someone anticipated, and as a result, a person was criticized. And when you're a little kid, you don't want negative reinforcement. You want positive reinforcement. You want to know you've done something that your parents are proud of. Now, you can make mistakes. We all do. But don't make the mistake something that defeats the person's desire to continue to grow and try again. And so when the psychotherapist says, all right, let's try something. Let's just try something real simple. Tonight, go to an Indian restaurant and try something different. And so the person says, okay, so they go and they try it. And then right after, call me. And the person that calls says, I enjoyed the taste. It was different and kind of a sweet, bitter, these curries, a little hotter than what I'm used to, but a lot of different things I'd never eat. I'd never eaten cauliflower and eggplant the way they made them. Okay, that's a step. That's a little breakthrough. Now, were you threatened by any of that? Did you fear any of that? Were there any negative consequences? And you think, no. So on the one hand, a placebo is having someone have something happen, a breakthrough, minor, minimal, or major, where there's no, let's say, pill. There's no hard science. It's something within the person's own mind. And this has been shown time and again. For example, in Italy, there was a study where doctors were told that it was a very powerful blood pressure and lowering medication or something like that. And they told the patients the same. The trouble is the doctors were given a placebo and did not know it. Therefore, the doctor's belief in something was transferred into the patient as a placebo. So both the doctor and the patient both participated in the placebo, and it showed improvement, even though it was a sugar pill. So just imagine then all of the times we have been given placebos by our parents, kissing the boo-boo, and it's okay now, isn't it? And you look and you say, yeah. Because the parents said, it's okay. And there's nothing in the room to hurt you. The clothes over there on the hamper, that's just clothes, not a monster. And so suddenly the confidence in the parent from the child is a placebo. We can have placebos work in many different ways, including opening up the healing energy channels in our body, to be able to vibrate with other forms of communication, other levels of vibration that are there to heal, being close to nature. Stop talking and let nature talk to you. And that opens you up to the placebo effect of nature. So you see, an awful lot of what goes on in the healing process has to do with placebo. And it's real, and it works. From the University of Southern California comes a study about fasting. And fasting-like diets have profound effects upon the autoimmune inflammatory conditions like multiple sclerosis. So according to a human study, limiting your caloric intake and fasting-like diet switches on a process in which the body kills bad cells and begins to generate new healthy ones. Now, for those of us who have been practicing natural hygiene and having only one meal a day and smoothies and then kind of slight grazing throughout the day with juices and other things, like just taking a piece of avocado and putting a nice sweet onion on it, put some mustard on that or lemon juice and have that. That's just a grazing meal, low in calories, rich in nutrients, but it's not the same as sitting down to a full meal where you fill up your whole system. Well, that can help with multiple sclerosis. It can help with all forms of regeneration. And this was published in the highly respected journal Cell Reports. So you can help overcome debilitating neurological and autoimmune diseases that affect over 350,000 Americans, where the immune system turns on itself and attacks the myelin sheath, which is crucial for the conduction of nerve impulses through the nervous system. And malfunctioning T cells attack the myelin and damage nerve fibers. And the symptoms are similar to Lyme's disease in that they can lead to blindness and paralysis. So interrupting that degenerative process is key to recovery. So by going on a modified fast where you're liquefying a lot of your food by taking a great smoothie in the morning, that can help you. It can reduce C-reactive protein, turn off inflammation, reduce visceral fat, like your belly fat, thigh fat. It can prevent cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and arthritis. So that is important. Also, there is a interesting natural fruit that can inhibit colorectal cancer cell growth. This was work done in South Korea at the Wonkwang University. And the fruit of the greater burdock plant, referred to as Nayu Bangzai, or more commonly Arcitii, A-R-C-I-T-I-I, fructus, F-R-U-C-T-U-S. It's used in traditional Chinese medicine and it can prevent the spread of colorectal cancer. And this was published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. So hopefully you wrote that down, and if you know someone with colorectal cancer, you can suggest that. Also from University of York, which is in Canada, they found that a lifetime risk of cardiometabolic death is directly related to your vitamin D status. The more vitamin D that you have, the less risk you have of dying of cardiovascular disease. And that's important. And finally, from Harvard Medical School, as well as University of Massachusetts, the CDC said there is no treatment for autism. They are right. There is no cure for autism. Again, they are right. You can't even improve it once it's advanced. Again, they're right. And yet I've done exactly that. Not in secret. In a 16-month study on brain behavior, was able to reverse Parkinson's disease, very advanced Alzheimer's, and autism. That young man, his name is Jonathan Ortega. His parents, two wonderful human beings, both retired New York City police officers, were having no success. He was on 4 anti-anxiety medications and was so large, they were fearful that he would hurt himself or others. He couldn't speak. He could grunt. And that's when I put him on a protocol. And then 16 months later, in Washington, D.C., at a large group of scientists and physicians, I'm guesstimating somewhere between 5 and 7,000, I was one of the keynote presenters of a scientific paper. However, the paper that I was supposed to present, based upon my work with over 500 women with menopausal symptoms over a 12-month period, that I was able to reverse 93% of all their menopausal symptoms and regain their youth, I didn't present that paper. I brought 3 people out on stage. One was Jonathan Ortega. Another was a former professor in art at a major university. And another had hepatitis B, herpes 1 and 2, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and mycoplasma, multiple pneumonias. And they were all cured, all reversed. And Jonathan came out and read that he was outstanding student of the month, I believe it was, for 10 months at a major school. He's now, I believe, just graduated from college, completely normal and an outstanding student. So when they say that you cannot reverse these diseases, they are absolutely correct. But then when I reverse them, they don't care. They don't want to know that. And that's because of something Fritz Perl said, the father of Gestalt. He said, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So what you don't want to do, then don't find out about, because then you open a door. So here is what the CDC says. Presently, autism spectrum disorder is considered a condition with no known conventional treatments. Quote, there is no medication that can cure autism spectrum disorder or treat the core symptoms. Wow. All those highly paid scientists and physicians down at the CDC, and we did it. Now, thankfully, and despite the failings of pharmaceutical-based medicine, there are natural interventions that have been studied and appear to hold great promise. For instance, there has been a National Library of Medicine with over 30 natural substances that may play a role in improving the condition. And if you look under the abstracts of Autism Spectrum Disease Research Database, you'll find a list of over 20 substances that should be avoided there, including heavy metals and vaccines, common dietary components like gluten. But then you have broccoli extract that does the impossible and improves autism spectrum disorder. In fact, the sulforaphane, meaning sulfur, and that's a molecule found in cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and cabbage and Brussels sprouts, is the most promising of those candidates. Now, this is in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. That is the most prestigious scientific body in America. Quote, sulforaphane treatment of autism spectrum disorder found that a broccoli sprout extract significantly improved the behavior of boys and men with autism spectrum disorder. The researchers pointed out that presently no conventional mechanism-based treatment is available for this condition. Sulforaphane was selected in part because its physiological effects are well characterized and ideal for those with autism spectrum disorder. So, the placebo-controlled randomized pilot study of 44 males, ages 13 to 27, showed that after 18 weeks of treatment with sulforaphane-rich broccoli sprout extract, 46% had significant improvements in social interactions, and 42% had significant improvements in verbal communications. Additionally, more than half the participants showed decreases in abnormal behaviors, including irritability, hyperactivity, repetitive movements. And once treatment stopped, most of the behaviors returned to pre-treatment levels. So I'm glad that they did this study. They did it with just one nutrient. But the reality is there are many things they could be doing that can make a difference. Many. And I'm happy to work with people with autism. I'll be doing another study when I return to the city with brain conditions and also Lyme's disease and chronic fatigue syndrome. Finally, from Westmead Institute for Medical Research, published in the Journal of Gerontology, dietary fiber intake is tied to successful aging, meaning that if you have good dietary fiber from fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and grains and legumes, you're going to live a longer life. You're going to have healthier gut bacteria. This is published in the Journal of Gerontology. And also from the University of Pennsylvania, the U.S. soldiers have the worst heart health than civilians. This is in the Journal of the American Heart Association. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that, not the least of which is they're overstressed. And stress, especially in combat zones, creates an increase in cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, adrenaline, catecholamines, all of which then produce a massive amount of free radicals, and all of this destroys the heart. So, not surprising there. And if you eat eggs, think again, University of Massachusetts. The risk of heart disease and death increases with the number of eggs an individual consumes. That's right. Research that tracked the diets, health, and lifestyle habits of 30,000 adults across the country for 31 years has found that cholesterol in eggs, when consumed in large quantities, is associated with ill health effects. This was in the Journal of the American Medical Association. But you say, didn't we see that that soy should be avoided and that meats should be consumed? Yeah, the Weston Price Foundation and its apologists, including Dr. McCullough and others who believe in that. But all of the science is against them. They can have their beliefs, and that's fine. But the science says otherwise. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going right into your calls so that we can see how you're going to approach some of the questions that I asked earlier. Please stay with us.
Yes, this message is for the Gary Nall Show. I do agree that to make a case for climate change and to just basically tell people, just look out your window. I mean, when it rains, it's severe. When it's hot, it's severe. It's not like it used to be. You don't have to be scientific with most people.
Well, we didn't hear the end of it. He just stopped talking. When you stop talking, the recorder stops recording. I don't know what to make of that. So if you could call back, please, and extend your comments, then we can understand what you were trying to say.
This is my opinion about global warming, or my suggestion, I should say. We have to get some influential people to stand out. So perhaps we could have the environmentalist Pope Francis make a stand and have Francis Fridays, where he could say, as a step to help the world, to have no meat on Fridays.
I think that's absolutely a first-rate idea. Thank you very much for that. Let's put this into a larger context. Right now, the Catholic Church is going through a very challenging time, and deservedly so. On the one hand, the Irish laundries for over 100 years were young girls that were considered troublemakers or runaways were put by the authorities in these Irish laundries run by the Catholic Church, the diocese, and each of the communities in Ireland. And they were worked 6 days a week from sunup past sunset. They could never go out of the buildings. Some lived their entire lives and died there and were buried there. All that money went to the Vatican. Everyone in the church hierarchy knew, including the popes, that this form of indentured slavery was occurring. Shame on the Catholic Church and all of the popes that were involved in that. But then again, there is no shame with political people. Then you had the sexual predation. Not just a minor scandal, a phenomenally major scandal, and no one was honest enough to go back to show that this had been going on through the entire history of the Catholic Church. Nuns raped, boys sodomized, and sexually assaulted. And in fact, Pope Benedict actually was the cardinal, the most powerful cardinal, who protected the pedophile priests and moved them around and moved them into Italy and into monasteries so they couldn't be brought anywhere else in the world, because the Vatican City is a sovereign state, just like the United States. And you couldn't get extradition. But here's where you're right. The current pope has made some serious mistakes in judgment. He should have immediately purged all of his cardinals and bishops and all the others who have been involved in any scandals whatsoever, and allowed more idealistic, ethical, and moral people to come forward to take their places. The Vatican is a cesspool of corruption, but the Pope is not. He has made some mistakes, but on almost all issues, including science, he is progressive on many issues, not on all. He's just as regressive as all the others when it comes to allowing women. Well, I won't go into what I consider his shortcomings. He is still a beloved figure, probably the single most beloved figure on the planet. You're talking about 1.2 billion Catholics. So imagine what would happen if he says and just take one day a week, every Friday, follow me as I help save the planet, become healthier, go for a locally grown foods and stay on a plant-based diet. But at the same time, give a lecture, maybe 1 hour lecture once a week, upon how we lower the carbon footprint, especially methane, which is multiple times more powerful at creating global warming than carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide is at the highest level in human history, right now, today. So we're doing nothing to change anything. Platitudes don't stop global warming. So he would be the only famous figure in the world that would actually be leading towards a diet like this, and then have the Vatican as official policy, because it has an enormous amount of influence in Italy and South America and other countries, start a campaign to plant trees. Now, ideally, we need 1 trillion trees planted on the earth each year for the next 5 years to counterbalance the carbon sinks loss, especially in the Amazon, where the new president there is just destroying the Amazon at enormous speed. and China's building mega cities, which will hold over 400 million people, and causing massive global warming in the process. So imagine if you saw the Pope and the other members of the church take off those stupid-ass robes and actually go out like human beings that they're supposed to be. How smart is it to be talking about religious beliefs in Latin when people can't even speak it? Whoa, not like being behind the times a while. Just go out like people. You know, go out there with shovels and plant trees and work with agronomists and work with horticulture experts of how you plant them, what kind you plant them. And the Vatican has a lot of resources. There are planes now that can carry pods, tree pods, and they have a spike on them. And you drop them, and they go right into the ground, and they can take root. So you could plant hundreds of thousands of trees in a month. So imagine then if the Pope started plant-based Fridays and then planting trees in the countries they have some influence, and then being the face of the new environmental movement, and bring in this young, dynamic teenager, Greta Thunberg, from Sweden, to be there. Could you imagine what she has been able to do? She is more important and more honest than anyone in the environmental movement in the world. Do you think I trust or believe Al Gore or any of these other punks within the environmental movement? If you think I trust the environmental movement to tell us the truth about the environment, then listen to my talk at the United Nations on Earth Day, where I was the keynote speaker. In fact, I was the only speaker in a packed hall, and where I really went after those who were sitting there because of who they had taken money from, who were the polluters, and what they hadn't done, nothing, to save the planet. And so we need someone who's young and idealistic. So you got someone who's older and powerful and on many issues very ethical and honest, and the two working together. You talk about a photo op, the Pope with Thunberg planting trees, going on a vegan diet. That would cause tens of millions of young teenagers to do the same thing, and then showing the sanctity of life, showing what it means to hold a lamb in your hand that's not going to be a meal. And the same for a calf or a veal calf that's not going to be kept in a crate. So yes, he is the most influential person in the world. He is highly intelligent. He is a person of humble background. He has a strong heart. He's one of the most politically corrupt organizations in the world, in the history of the world. But that doesn't mean that he can't do a lot of good. And he has, I believe this is something he would look forward to. So, since we have a lot of people listening all over the world, I'm willing to help the Pope, and I'm willing to help Greta Thunberg with the following. I have a book. It's not even out yet. It's published. It's called Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time. It's 700 pages. It's not for sale, not yet. But I would be happy to get a copy of the book and at least five documentaries I've made, including the most comprehensive documentary in the world that will be finished in about a month on the planet, Saving the Planet. But I have other ones like Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time, Plant Codes, and about 14 articles that we've written about the environment. We could send them to the Pope, and hopefully he would be able to look at them and see that there's a lot of people who would love to have someone who has ethics, morals, and standards help be a new voice in the environmental movement. So thank you for your thought. I appreciate it. We're going to take a break and come back, and I have some commentaries I want to share with you. Please stay with us.
What you feel now? What you know?
I'd like to welcome you. I'm going to talk about the debt in just a few moments. I just want to mention a few things first. We've just finished a little over a month ago, about 2 months ago, we finished our retreat. We had some phenomenal success. Phenomenal. And some people have sent me some unsolicited testimonials. I'm not going to read them at this time, but we do have, I believe, a few of the best testimonials. And I'm going to ask our studio in New York City if Alex or Jesse could play a few for you right now so you can hear what some people experienced.
I am Maria Caffarelli. I come from Long Island. I didn't come for a specific reason for myself, but I came for my son because he has some problem with eyes. But anyway, since I'm here, I'm seeing a lot of positive effect even on me that I thought I didn't need. I had a surgery on my right rib because I fell. And then after 10 months ago, and then I was a bit weak, I could walk. I thought that this was going on for months and months. But Gerino gave me that kind of energy, I don't know how to call. And all of a sudden, I'm walking for a minute. This morning I walk 1 hour by myself. I can't believe. I used to go to the mall with my husband. After 5 minutes, I told my husband, I won't sit down. My husband is much. Now I'm sorry. You know why I'm crying? Because I'm grandmother. I had to take care of 2 grandkids because my son works, my daughter-in-law works. They're small, the 3 years, the 2 years, they have a lot of energy. I have to chase them. Yeah, I could do because it was a lot of work for me. But now, I don't know what happened. Miracle? Maybe Mr. Garino is, I know this is genius, but he makes miracles too. Thank you. I have to thank Garino for all my, because they give energy and strength to continue my life. Thank you, Carino. Thank you. Sorry.
My name is Sita. About 17 years ago, my husband was he's a truck driver. And he switched on the radio, and there was Gary. And he called me, and he says, put on the radio at such station. There is somebody. Listen. A couple of years before that, I went to my doctor. They diagnosed me that I have 3 lumps in my left breast and 2 in my right. And they said that they want to see what it is. So they did a surgical biopsy on one of the breasts. And my husband listened to the radio station, and there were Gary. When they did the surgery on one of the breasts, the other one just disappeared because listening to Gary, we changed our diet and become a vegan, eating only plant-based. Other things happened. I had two growing flesh in my eyes, was black in my eyes from not seeing. I went to the doctor, and he says that they're going to give me surgery in one of the eyes, which they graft they scrape it out from my left eye, and they graft it underneath my eye, and they replace it and they stitch it. But the right eye, being changing my diet, become a vegan, listening to Gary, it disappeared also. So I didn't have to have other surgery for my breast nor my eyes. And then we come at Gary retreat. We spend a week with Gary now, and we learn so much. I learn how to cook, how to de-stress, and it is the greatest joy. I will take so much with me. And I never walk a mile. Today, I did 14 miles on the track for the first time in my life. And my husband, he did 16 miles. We never did anything, but listening to Gary, he gave us energy work, and that will help us. I'm so grateful and thankful to Gary for the Balance of Our Life and Luan.
My name is Glenn. This is my third retreat. I came last April. I came with a diagnosis of 20 years ago of chronic fatigue syndrome, multiple chemical sensitivity, and on and on and on. But I basically could not eat food. I couldn't juice. Everything was too much. I ate a mono diet, which consisted of grapes, potatoes, and squash, and usually zucchini, usually one at a time. So I was a little, and I did that for about 5 years before I got here. I've seen his brochures before, and he always advertised food, and I always wanted to come to his retreat, but they served food, and there was no sense in me coming. But once I got here, I learned a big lesson. The first retreat, I started slowly, but I was able to eat, by the end of the week, everything they served me. All the food, it was delicious. After not eating food in 5 years that amounted to anything, it was pretty good. So, second retreat I came to, when I went home, I started having little problems. I was having problems eating grains. So Leonard, the chef, catered to my every need. He just went way out of his way to make sure that I did not go hungry. I had plenty of food without grains. Now I'm on my third retreat. I ate everything. There was not a single food that I did not eat. So it was, it's been unbelievable. So all you people out there who are floxies or chronic fatigue, that there's many of you out there that this can be overcome. I would like to add that I really pay attention to what he talks about, the mind and how it affects your health. It's 50%. For chronic fatigue syndrome, it's probably 90%. To remap your body, to get it to realize what is real and what is bad. Because when you have chronic fatigue syndrome and multiple chemical sensitivity, your senses are so alert, they're going to pick up everything and keep you in a constant state of hyperness that you just can't overcome. So this is just wonderful.
Those are just a few of the people. The one woman, it might have been a little difficult to hear, but what she was saying is that 9 months ago she had some serious surgery and there were complications, nerves were cut. So she's been in 24/7 chronic pain, severe pain, so bad that she can't even walk more than a few feet and she has to sit down. Even when her husband would take her out for a walk, they would have to stop constantly. And on her last day here, she had no pain whatsoever in her body. And she decided to go out on the road for a walk. And she walked 6 miles. And thank goodness I had a camera. I didn't anticipate filming this. I was filming my lectures to do with some new documentaries, self-empowerment documentaries. But we just set it up that morning to see what would happen. And here she comes running, not walking, running for a half a mile up a steep hill. And all the guests were there. And they started applauding, and she was smiling ear to ear. So that's what happened to her. No pain. She can now run. She was out there for 6 miles. So now you understand why she was a little emotional. Anyhow, what I'm going to do is we're going to do one more this coming October. And I wanted you to be the first, the PRN audience, to be the first to know, because you were kind of left out of the last one. It was just as a fundraiser for WBAI, the sister station I've been on for 43 years. But a lot of people said that they wanted to come, and we had about 500 people who couldn't. We cut it at a certain number, and it's not very many. We generally allow only about more or less 40 people. So if you would like to come to the October one, it'll be full, every single one. Has been full since 1970. So give a call to Luann Panessi. She screens people to make sure it's right for you. Write down this number, please, 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Luann Panessi's number to call if you want to join us in October. Gives you plenty of time to make your plans. 903-881-7008. 08. There's a lot that we don't know about what is going on with the government. But we do know this. For those of you like myself who are baby boomers, we grew up at a time when America had a stable economy. You had some major corporations, U.S. Steel, Bethlehem Steel, IBM, Xerox, General Motors. It was a mecca for middle-class working people, most of whom didn't go to college, but had master crafts and skills, and they made a living wage. They had very little debt. They had savings. They didn't buy what they couldn't afford. We didn't have credit cards at that time. And then in the mid-70s, a lot went wrong. Corporations no longer were there to be the economic and social anchor of a community. They had been there for over 100 years, many of them. Now they started to outsource work into the countries, and a lot of greedy people took advantage of that. And today, we are a country that is awash in debt and unemployment. The real unemployment numbers are around 21 to 27%, because we have 104 million Americans who are not included in the unemployment numbers, who at one time were fully employed. Professor Ellen Brown is very concerned about this. And she was concerned about how the government got us shackled by debt. And I wanted to share some of these insights, and I have my own commentaries on this. The U.S. federal debt has doubled since 2008's financial crisis. It shot up from $9.4 trillion in the mid-2008 to over $22 trillion as of this week. The debt is never paid off. The government just keeps paying the interest on it, and the interests keep rising. Just last year, the Fed announced plans to raise rates by 2020 to normal levels. The Fed funds target at 3.3%. So someone is making 3.3% for what costs zero to actually create money. And they want to sell about $1.5 trillion in federal securities at the rate of $50 billion a monthly, further growing the mountain of federal debt on the market. So when the Fed holds government securities, it returns the interest to the government after deducting its costs. But the private buyers of these securities will be pocketing the interest. Now, if you're talking about 3.3% and it costs zero to get that, then you're talking about 330% profit. And when the Fed holds government securities, why does it? Why can't we go to where we don't have a Federal Reserve, which is not a part of the government? It is not officially under the control of the federal government. It is an independent agency. Only the head of the Fed is appointed by the President of the United States. In fact, why can't the Fed eliminate itself and the federal government allow the Treasury, that is constitutionally mandated, to print and distribute money at zero interest? It could. It could absolutely do that. But then you have to realize how much money is made off the Fed's plan for quantitative tightening. And who's going to make that $1.5 trillion? Because if you look at how much interest people will make off $22 trillion that we have now in federal debt, you're talking about in the next 10 years, it's $1 trillion in net profit. That's net profit to someone, generally Wall Street bankers. The irony is the United States does not need to carry a debt to bondholders. At least it has been financially sovereign ever since Franklin Roosevelt took the dollar off the gold standard back in 1933. It was recognized by Birdsley Rumey, chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, in a 1945 presentation before the American Bar Association that taxes for revenue are obsolete. So here is the takeaway. Eliminate the Federal Reserve and eliminate the opportunity for people on Wall Street, Wall Street banks, to take the money from the Federal Reserve and then sell these in the form of bonds to those who can profit from them. Take away the profit-making out of all this and forgive all the debt that we could forgive. Then to do that, you have to know who controls our debt and how much debt do we have. Well, Richard Gale and I have simply added up all of our debt, and it's astronomical. the figures are nowhere in the public interest. For example, by my latest calculations, and these are based upon government statistics, we only hear about the $221 trillion of our current debt, but we're not told about the $73.36 trillion of total U.S. debt. We're not told about the state debt of $1.2 trillion, local debt of $1.8 trillion in municipalities. We're not told about personal debt of the individual Americans of $19.7 trillion, of mortgage debt on our homes and apartments and condos and cooperatives of $15.7 trillion, of student loan debt at $1.6 trillion, of credit card debt of $1 trillion, of Social Security liability of $19.7 trillion, because the federal government has taken our money. The federal government does not pay a penny into Social Security. We pay that throughout our lives. So when we retire, we get it back on a proportional basis, and it should be adjusted for inflation. So they've taken over $2.3 trillion and put IOUs in there instead. How much unfunded liability are we looking at? $123 trillion. How about Medicare's liability? $30 trillion. How about currency and credit derivatives? $572 trillion if they go bad. How about the U.S. debt held by foreign countries that they'll never get back? $6.4 trillion. How about corporate debt? $9.1 trillion. So add it all up and you're over $200 trillion in debt at $21 trillion in income. And of that income, it's not actually $21 trillion, because upwards of 17% of that is our medical industrial complex. Then you have people buying things because they have no savings at all, so they're buying their food on credit card, they're paying their electric bill on credit card, their car payment on credit card. So that's not savings that's used to pay these, which would contribute to the gross domestic product. That's debt. And then financial income on Wall Street that stays on Wall Street. What Wall Street banks make, they keep. What the billionaires and the hedge fund makers make, they keep. It doesn't get distributed through the economy. That's another 12%. So the actual amount of money coming in that we can legitimately spend is really closer to about $13 trillion. So we're looking realistically at over a 2,000% debt to gross domestic product. We're completely bankrupt. We're completely, totally bankrupt. And yet, none of this is discussed. None of the weight of this is discussed, or the likely bubbles that are going to start collapsing. And what happens when China overtakes the United States in the next 24 months as the number one manufacturer in the world, and therefore people want the yuan, their currency, because it's backed by gold, and where ours is not backed by anything. The good faith and trust in the United States. Well, good luck with that, and watch the dollar collapse by about 20%, I predict. That's what I believe. And with that, think of all the people that had their dollars in their real estate, and look at the value of property collapsing. That doesn't even take into account what's going to be happening to land values in places that are no longer environmentally sustainable or sound. So when you take all this into account, where people are not insured for diseases that are causing them to go broke, when people, 104 million American adults, are out of work and are living just literally hand to mouth, where people can't buy food and medicine and pay their mortgages or rent, when homelessness is increasing, when disease is increasing, and when debt is increasing, and there is nothing stable in any of this, and now put into the final mix in this equation, environmental instability. What do you think is going to happen to 1 million farmers in the Midwest right now? Right now as we speak, they're going bankrupt. There'll be no protection for them. So, what do you think is going to happen with all these students? We could forgive that debt because the government owns at least 40%. So a lot of the debt we have, we could forgive if we didn't want to continue profiting off other people's suffering. And it wouldn't cost Americans anything for that to happen, at least for those where we can forgive the debt. This is the discussion we need to have. We've been lied to by everyone, from economists, and those saying, look how great the economy is, for some and just a tiny fraction it is, for everyone else, it is not. America has now become a third world nation for at least half of its citizens, and a first world nation for those who can afford to accumulate debt. And how many rich people, if you took away all their debt, would still be that rich, including the President of the United States? Take away all of his mortgages and all of his loans from Deutsche Bank and other banks that are holding up and propping up his property values, and you're left with a millionaire, not a billionaire. But what if you're just an average person where you can't even afford the food for your family? Isn't it time we had honest discussions about our economy and how to get out of debt and how to get off the grid and how to live more quality of life? We will on an upcoming program. But we're out of time now. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.